Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Press, Calgary Herald, Montreal Gazette, Globe and Mail. Jeff Blair has written for all four. And if you can survive the world of newspapers, you can survive anything. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, you know what? From a distance, it seems to me that money's the only reason Rex Ryan would want to be Buffalo Bills head coach, and that Ryan's big personality and reputation is frankly the only reason the Pegulas would have pursued him to the degree they did. In other words, it seems to me that Rex Ryan and the Buffalo Bills is not exactly a marriage made in football heaven. We talked to Brian Costello, the New York Post, in the last hour. Of course, he covered Rex Ryan, got his take on it. And to say that Brian Costello was skeptical... is skeptical of how this is all going to work out. Well, it's a bit of an understatement. We've already seen the impact of Rex Ryan's arrival. Jim Schwartz, the Bills' defensive coordinator, has left town and or is expected to leave town. And while I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Jim Schwartz is necessarily a genius or God's gift to football, the fact of the matter is the Bills' defense was the best part of their team last year. It was one of the best defenses in the NFL. And we're also led to believe that there was an awful lot of lobbying internally and externally by some of his players to, if not get Jim Schwartz the head coaching job when Doug Marrone left, at least ensure that the replacement for Doug Marrone was someone who would be able to work with Schwartz. Well, that's not the case now. In getting Rex Ryan, the Buffalo Bills are bringing in a reputed defensive guru. And let's keep this in mind. Ryan's once vaunted Jets defense, in fact, finished 24th in the NFL this season in points allowed. It was 30th in third down conversion rate allowed and 25th in opposing red zone touchdown rate. So Rex Ryan is a defensive guy coming off a bad defensive year, taking over a team that had a pretty good defensive year, displacing in the process the guy who was the defensive coordinator for that team. And Rex Ryan, as Brian Costello told us, is a guy who loves to focus on the defense. And in New York, they thought it was often at the expense of the offense. There's a lot of reasons to look at this hiring and shake your head. Now, that's from a distance. Mark Kelso is the Buffalo Bills radio analyst. He's certainly better placed in that market and in the game to tell me or to tell us whether or not my reading of the situation is right or wrong. That's why we have Mark Kelso on the Jeff Blair Show. Mark, thanks a lot for doing this. Again, from a distance, not as close to it as you guys are, there seem to be a lot of questions being raised about this decision from both sides. First of all, I'll ask you, as a guy who was a defensive back, is Rex Ryan that good a defensive coach?
Well, geez, after your thoughts there, I mean, I'm thinking the sky is falling here, and you talked about the marriage of Rex Ryan with the Pegulas and the Bills organization, and they went to the church now, so they better figure out how they're going to make it work. So he is considered a terrific defensive mind. There's no question about that. And the personnel that he has inside, the way their linebackers and defensive line play, is fantastic. And they've been, I don't know what they're, I mean, look at their total defense this year. Their cornerback play wasn't particularly strong. Kelvin Pryor is, you know, for the Jets, was a terrific young safety, but he was a rookie. He was just like Preston Brown. Those guys played together at Louisville last year. And So he was a really good player. And I think on the back end they weren't quite as good. And then they try to run all those blitz packages. So when you don't have guys that can cover man, sometimes you get yourself into a little trouble. So I think that's what they had. But I think they defended the run really well. And as a matter of fact, you'd have to look at the numbers. But at one point in the season, they were defending the run better than the Bills were as far as average yards per game. I don't know how they finished the year, but I'm sure they finished in the top five defenses defending the run. And I have some really good guys on that side of the ball. But there's no question you wonder, why a guy would get relieved of his duties in one NFL organization and then be so high on everybody's list. Well, it just tells me that the skill set that people believe a head coach needs to have is hard to come by, and there aren't many guys that are out there in the coaching profession who have the skill and the maturity and the knowledge base and the personality to be able to lead an NFL football team. And I think people need to remember too that Bill Belichick had a Cleveland head job before he ended up in New England, and then he had a couple, at least one stop in between that when things didn't go particularly well in Cleveland. And I think you learn an awful lot in your first head coaching opportunity. And there was a lot of success to be had by Rex Ryan and that Jet organization early in his head coach tenure, and things have not gone well and the last couple of years, but they still put together some pretty good stretches, even, with trying to develop a young quarterback as well. So, I mean, I think they see some of that. I think they see the fact that there's a maturity that occurs when the coach has been a head coach previously and he understands some of the things that he did right and some of the things that maybe he'd like to do differently than perhaps he did in the previous program. And I thought reaching out to Coach Schwartz was a evidence of his maturity and the fact that he was willing to let Coach Schwartz do what he had done so well this year with the fine defensive unit the Bills have and let those guys just play on that side of the ball. But I guess that wasn't meant to be. I like the fact that Greg Roman is slated to come in as the offensive coordinator because he has a very creative running game mind and can help that running game get kick-started, which they're going to need if they're going to be successful. So, I mean, let's see how things unfold. Yeah, I think there's a little bit of confusion amongst the fans about, well, I mean, it looked like things were chaotic sometimes in New York, but I think perception is a lot different than reality sometimes, especially with the New York media. And the Pegulas might not know X's and O's, and maybe they do. I don't know. I haven't ever had a talk of X's and O's with Terry and Kim, but I don't know that they know those things, that aspect of it, but they certainly know personalities and they know what they're looking for in a person to lead an organization. And they must feel that Rex Ryan has those traits. And that's one of the reasons that they try to lock him up. And I think I like the fact they have continuity, that they offered him a 5-year deal, because there needs to be some continuity here with this head coaching job.
Were you surprised, Mark, when you first heard news that it was going to be Rex Ryan?
I would admit I probably was surprised a little bit and not particularly for any reason. I mean, I kind of felt that Coach Ryan would have another head job in his league. And I know Atlanta, he was looking at the Atlanta job, and I heard San Francisco was interested in him. I mean, I think there were other candidates. Certainly fans felt that there might be other candidates who had closer ties to Buffalo. In fact, I don't know what Rex's tie is to Buffalo, if any, but I know Buddy coached at his father coached at the University of Buffalo for a couple of years at one point. And I don't know if Rex was ever a resident here when his dad was coaching here at the University of Buffalo. So, maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. Maybe there's some affection there. I don't know the answer to that. But, yeah, it's a little bit of a surprise, the fact that somebody loses their job one place and then is kind of transplanted here. And again, the whole thing has the whole way this thing unfolded since New Year's Eve has just been kind of chaotic. But I think they did a pretty exhaustive search. They interviewed guys that have not been head coaches before and have been coordinators. I mean, I thought Frank was going to be a strong candidate, which I'm sure he was, but ultimately and perhaps was not offered the job. And they interviewed guys that have been long tenured coaches in this league and Shanahan, and then they've interviewed guys that have had one head coaching stop and again, hopefully learned an awful lot and can use that knowledge base to come here and push the Bills organization where it would like to be, and that's a consistent playoff contender.
We're in conversation with Buffalo Bills radio analyst Mark Kelso on the Jeff Blair Show. How do you think the Bills' defensive players in particular will react to Rex Ryan, because, you know, everything you read and some of the stuff you hear from Buffalo, you certainly got an indication that that unit had really sort of really coalesced around Jim Schwartz.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a little bit of a frustration, but I mean, when you step back and look at it, I mean, Rex Ryan has a brilliant defensive mind. I mean, he orchestrated a lot of those Baltimore Ravens defensive units when Ray Lewis was there, and that great personnel at Ed Reed. I mean, so he knows what he's doing on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, the frustration probably comes with guys that have played for different coordinators over the years, and the terminology changes a little bit. And I think some of those guys are saying, you know, we're going to have to change terminology. We're going to have to change what we're doing. Is it going to be a hybrid? What's it going to be like? And then, by the way, I don't even think he can meet with his players like for 3 months or something, because they don't have to be back in the building. I don't know if he can call a volunteer meeting or something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can he just have a meeting? I mean, if I'm Coach Ryan, I'm making a phone call, a personal phone call to every single player on that squad right now, starting, you know, as soon as he gets the job, and telling those guys, hey, I this is where I want to be. I want to be with you guys, or you know, maybe he waits a week when he can watch those guys on tape and just can make a comment. But you know, here's why I took the job, and here's what we're going to do here in Buffalo. And I think that would lend an air of confidence to the players that he's here, you know, to move the progress that they made this year forward, and not do anything that would cause the organization or the team to take a step backward. I mean, they're going to continue to move forward, and they're kind of on the precipice here of pushing into the postseason. And again, I think he saw that, and certainly that probably played a part in his decision to say they got great personnel here, and we're going to do some things with these free agents as well to keep them in the fold, so that we can continue to make forward progress.
You know, you made a point earlier, which I found interesting, and you seem to be suggesting that obviously people are going to wonder, there are differences between Jim Schwartz's defense and Rex Ryan's defense. I mean, presuming that regardless of who Rex Ryan hires as a defensive coordinator, whether it's Dennis Thurman or whoever comes in as the defensive coordinator, the defensive system's probably going to be more towards Rex's than Jim Schwartz's. You kind of indicated that the Bills have enough versatility there that they could probably make it work. If they go whole hog towards the type of defense Rex Ryan wants, is there a particular position, Mark, the Bills will need to address, will need to shore up in order to make that defense work compared to the defense they had this year?
Yeah, a little bit. I think. I mean, the unit on this defensive team, I think, for the Bills, that was the least equipped for a 3-4 defense would be the linebackers, and because that unit did not have a ton of depth, and then with Kiko's loss this year, not being able to play the whole season, but if Brandon Spikes is back in the fold, he's played in the 30 defense an awful lot. I mean, I think Jerry Hughes would be very capable again if they can re-sign him. But that, there's going to be some adjustment there. So it's Jerry Hughes, it's Manny Lawson, it's that side where you might have to drop in coverage, and you want to be an asset in coverage or on early downs. I mean, because teams play with three wide receivers a lot, with that what they call 11 personnel, one running back, a tight end, three wide receivers. That puts the defensive units in an even front most of the time anyways. Unless on early downs, and this happened a lot in New York on early downs, they might just walk Kelvin Pace out and he'd line up on the slot receiver. So you're going to play zone, but you're going to just leave your big guys on the field on early downs because you're expecting a run from the opposition. So, I mean, there's some of those things as well, but that's the positions that would change. And then there's times when on the outside. So where are you going to play guys? Are you going to two gap guys? Are you going to play guys? Are you going to move guys a lot? But you know what? I it's a terminology thing, I think, for these players, because he used his personnel, his defensive personnel, extremely well in New York, and he had some really good linebackers, and those defensive guys, Wilkerson and Richardson and DeMond Harris. I mean, those guys, they are a really good front, and played really well for Rex Ryan. And that's the other thing I hear, that these guys really like playing for him. So even if there's some minor adjustments there, you know, rest assured that he will be able to wring every bit of talent that this Bills defensive unit has.
Mark, I appreciate you joining us. Should be a fun time tomorrow, and it'll be an interesting ride, if nothing else, with Rex Ryan.
Yeah, it'll be fun. What time is the press conference? I'll see if I can get back from Louisville by that time. What time is it?
I think it's around noon. Is it Travis, noon? It's noon.
That ain't happening.
All right, man. I don't blame you. I love Louisville. Have fun, Mark.
Okay, guys. Have a good day.
Take care. That's Mark Kelso, Buffalo Bills radio analyst. That, by the way, is an underrated city. All kidding aside. I had a chance to have a couple of winter meetings there. I kind of like Louisville. I'm going to tell you a story. A quick story, but a story nonetheless. When John Farrell was manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, back in those halcyon days, back in those giddy days, I remember him sitting around the dugout in spring training, his first spring training, as a matter of fact, talking to, there were four or five of us reporters. And somehow the conversation, somehow the conversation got around to sports psychology. And John Farrell was making the point that he foresaw a day where every team would have effectively a sports psychologist in uniform. Now, that could be a former player who'd gone on to study sports psychology. It could be an academic. And I'm not saying that the guy would have a uniform and sit in the dugout during the game and be helping with in-game decisions or performing, doing psychoanalysis between innings. But John Farrell made the point that he thought it was important to have somebody in uniform. And I remember him being very clear about this. Important to have somebody in uniform who could just circulate during batting practice or in spring training during drills and essentially get involved in mind training. And I remember looking at him. I remember a bunch of us looking at him. And I just asked him. Are you blue skying this? You know, and he said, no, absolutely. He said, I think in a few years, we're going to see every major league team do this. So fast forward to this year. And yesterday, the Boston Red Sox made their annual, announcement of front office personnel changes, et cetera, et cetera. New evaluators, things of that nature. One of the announcements they made, or one of the announcements that will be made, is the creation of a Department of Behavioral Health. And Alex Speer of the Boston Globe had the story. According to team and industry sources, the Red Sox will name Dr. Richard Ginsberg, co-director of the PACES Institute of Sports Psychology at Massachusetts General Hospital, to be the head of that department. And this is a way... This is part of the Red Sox effort, as Alex Speer said, to broaden the way they address sports psychology. I find it fascinating. I absolutely believe, as John Farrell said, that we're getting to the point where we are going to see this as being a regular part of a team's front office. Clearly, the Red Sox are trying to get a leg up on everybody. Alex Speer of the Boston Globe, formerly of WEEI, joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Alex, first of all, congratulations on the move. I don't think I've spoken to you since then.
I appreciate it, Jeff. We have not spoken since then, and really it's been a void.
Certainly
for me. Anyway.
No pressure on you. It's not like anybody any good has ever covered baseball for the Boston Globe. So, just kidding. Tell me about this. I mean, I'm fascinated in this because it did bring back that conversation with John Farrell. And I've got to think you guys probably had similar conversations because it's something that I remember him saying, something that he was taking very, very, very seriously.
For years, he's talked about kind of identifying the different, the different aspects of game preparation and, talked about the physical, the medical, and the mental is all being kind of these essential areas. Now, the form that it's taking with the Red Sox, certainly with Bob Tewksbury, he feels strongly as a former player that he doesn't want to be in uniform, and so he used to work in uniform in the Red Sox minor league system. And he'd throw batting practice, and then he'd sit around and shoot the ball with some players, and try to kind of offer them this kind of mental skills coaching. That's kind of a more accurate portrayal in some ways than sports psychology, right? Mm-hmm. A term that can be somewhat misleading when we think about the movie The Natural and these guys who are thinking about all the things that are wrong in their lives and trying to address them in order to figure out how to be better players for the New York Knights. So I'm not sure whether or not the other two guys who are going to be on the staff are going to be uniform or non-uniform, but the creation of a department is that goes beyond kind of this traditional mental skills coach in a sports setting is really interesting, and it's headed by not kind of the guy who gets a master's in counseling, or sometimes even a non-degreed individual who will just kind of want to talk to players and give them kind of like checkpoints, mental checkpoints, along with the physical checkpoints of their mechanics on the field. Instead, it's being headed by this PhD from Mass General Hospital, who is a psychiatrist, and who is able to kind of view things through a broader, to offer kind of broader psychiatric care as necessary to players. But that's only a part of it, because the provision of a service and also kind of a more scientific and rigorous way of exploring the value of individuals' routines as a means of preparing for games and putting themselves in position to perform at their peaks is interesting. But so too is kind of the more scientific side of psychiatry and doing things like figuring out whether or not how you can measure things like hand-eye coordination and reaction time in players as a means of predicting their future performance. Like, you can, there are these kind of computer simulations that you can put players through to figure out, and it's basically kind of turning video games into scouting data in some ways. But you can figure out, hey, look, this guy has terrible hand-eye coordination because when there's a moving object on a screen in front of him, it takes him, let's say, 30% longer than it does these other elite guys to figure out what that means. So it is a broader – so the idea of the creation of this department is, thinking more broadly about how behavioral health, how mental health it positions athletes to be able to succeed, to provide them with the best services to be able to achieve their kind of peak performance. And some of that is their mental skills coaches. Bob Tewksbury, after a year away from the Red Sox, is returning to them. He's joined on the staff by a couple of other guys. But some of it also involves kind of the science of, the field of psychiatry has evolved in a very, interesting data-driven way in recent decades, and let's figure out what's going on in the noggin and a little bit, and figure out what that means for player performance in a more scientific fashion. So long as it's a comfortable one, I think that it's being fundamentally defined as the provision of a service to players,
right?
So helping them to work through, not just the stuff that happens to them on the field, and they're embracing this notion of mindfulness that's becoming very significant generally in a broad social sense, but also increasingly in sports. Phil Jackson is trying to incorporate it into some of what the Knicks are doing. The Seahawks actually in the last couple of years have incorporated mindfulness, meditation, yoga and Russell Wilson has kind of glommed onto it and hired his own mindfulness consultant because he was so taken by this notion, which is to basically accept your circumstances so that you can perform through them rather than, trying to block them out and then suddenly being overwhelmed by them.
But, right.
So it's a provision of services to allow players to perform at their peaks at the same time that it's also science and trying to figure out how to better scout players and how to better assist their player development.
Yeah, one of the things, Alex, that interests me, you talked about neuroscouting in your article. And, I mean, I can remember, I was going to say back in the day, but I can remember when I was covering hockey on a limited basis, admittedly. I covered a little bit of hockey at the Montreal Gazette when I was doing baseball. But the Montreal Canadiens, and this is back in, I want to say, the mid-90s, they would take their goaltenders to a flight simulator academy at an Air Force base near Montreal, and they would have them do sort of drills where they would have, and I know other teams do this now, but they would have flashing lights, and essentially they would measure the goaltender's ability to touch the light with his hand, and of course the lights would vary in terms of strength and all this stuff. Uh-huh. And teams have done this for a while, but what interests me about the whole aspect of neuroscouting here is, are we getting to the point, Alex, where you can see, and I'd love to know how somebody could do a movie on this and maybe incorporate it into Moneyball, but we could see scouts and personnel directors sitting around a room going over neuroscouting reports to decide whether they're going to take player X with the second pick overall in the draft or player Y with the second pick overall in the draft. Are we getting to that point?
I think we're already, I think that we're close to it. If we aren't already there, in which that's kind of, it's not going to rule the day, right? Like mm-hmm. if you have a guy who seemingly has great hand-eye coordination in some of these simulations along the lines of exactly what you're talking about. But you know, it's been scaled to a somewhat more manageable thing for a scout to deal with as opposed to going to an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly you need to see a guy hitting a baseball, right, to believe in the idea that he's going to be able to continue to do it. But hitting a baseball at the amateur level is so different than hitting it at the major league level that I don't know that that the data has been around for long enough, has been explored for long enough to suggest that, you know, the teams now know exactly what it means, but
mm-hmm.
I think that they believe, you know, they believe that there's something there, and they believe that there's a critical nature, a centrality to the importance of hand-eye coordination for baseball players that suggests this is something that we should indeed account for. So I'm not sure if teams know exactly yet how to weight that kind of information, but I think that it is something that they are mindful of right now in amateur scouting rooms.
Alex Beer of the Boston Globe joins the Jeff Blair Show. I mean, it almost sounds remarkable. We could be moving towards some sort of mathematical quantification of makeup, which I never thought we'd see.
Well, you know, certainly, like, it's really interesting because baseball doesn't have a scouting combine, right? So, like,
yep.
For years and years, what they've had to, you know, what they've had to scout players on is their performance, and, you know, in terms of what statistics they produce, and they can take some, you know, they can take some measurements, although it's done on a team-by-team basis, and they can see what a guy looks like on the field in order to be able to, you know, kind of have this idea of a projection, but now this question of neuroscouting of, well, you know, why is it that a guy like a, you know, let's say a Kevin Youkilis for an example mm-hmm. of a guy who I covered for a long time, who outperformed any projection of him. Why did he do that? And, you know, and probably part of the reason is because he had this, what's described ultimately as freakish hand-eye coordination. But what does that mean? And so now we're getting to a point of being able to quantify it or measure it in some way, which kind of takes you in an interesting direction in terms of being able to figure, you know, how sustainable are these skills that don't really seem to align with a guy who, as an amateur, was a kind of bad body guy who looked physically not the part of a major leaguer.
Yeah, well, at the end of the day, it's all about finding the newest market inefficiency. This is really fascinating, Alex. It's a terrific article, and I look forward to reading more on it. And I look forward to talking to you again.
Please do, and keep me posted on any other airplane hangar stories that you might have. That sounds pretty wild.
I will.
Did you get to go?
No, they did not let any. They did not let reporters go. Yeah. I think it was probably at Saint Hubert, which is the Canadian, which is the Air Force base outside of Montreal. But yeah, it was kind of interesting. And I know other teams have done the same thing with essentially testing them, running them through tests that training drills that fighter pilots go through as well. And I know for a fact that a couple of F1 teams, Formula 1 teams, do the same thing, because I did get, believe it or not, at one point to talk to Jackie Stewart about it when I was covering an F1 race. So,
great.
It was kind of cool. Alex, it was good to talk to you as always.
Thanks, Jeff.
Take care. That's Alex Speer of the Boston Globe. It's a terrific article. It's up on the Boston Globe website. I find this stuff fascinating. And as I said, we're going, it's just that whole conversation with John Farrell about taking a more serious look at mind training. Of course, you know, you can imagine John Farrell sitting around talking to a bunch of baseball writers about mind training, kind of looking at him like, but the Red Sox are clearly taking this to a degree that moves beyond what we've seen from other teams. And my guess is if one team is doing it, we are probably going to see other teams follow. So as we said, Rex Ryan will be announced tomorrow. Officially, he'll be unveiled. He's already been announced. He'll be unveiled tomorrow in Buffalo as head coach of the Bills. Probably not the most surprising thing to happen in light of the NFL playoffs. I know there were rumors out there that John Fox potentially was coaching his last game with the Denver Broncos. The sense that he would be a candidate for the job with the Chicago Bears amongst other teams. I don't know, though, if everybody or anybody expected to see the entire staff get blown up. That's what's happened. John Fox went 46-18 over four seasons with the Broncos. Think about that. He made the playoffs all four times. He is now gone. This is an organization that faces a lot of questions, not the least of which is what impact will this have on Peyton Manning's future? Will it have any impact? Troy Rink is the Broncos beat writer for the Denver Post. We'll talk to Troy Rink about a wild day for the Denver Broncos and what it all means for Peyton Manning. Troy Rink joins us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We want to thank our friends at St. Louis Bar and Grill, by the way, for the mess of crispy chicken, southern chicken, fried buttermilk chicken that they just delivered. They've got a promotion on now until January 31st. Enjoy a five-piece bucket of the aforementioned crispy southern fried buttermilk chicken served with fries and a 20-ounce Budweiser or Bud Light for $15.99. Again, that promotion is until January 31st. You can check out St. Louis Bar and Grill's new website, www.stlouiswings.com. And, of course, St. Louis Bar and Grill is 100% owned and operated. I believe that should be Canadian owned and operated. It says it's 100% owned and operated. I don't know. Whatever. Anyhow, there you go. What are you looking at me laughing for? I'm just reading the thing. Come on, man. The free wings. Everybody likes free wings. I know one guy who likes free wings. Troy Rink, the Broncos beat writer for the Denver Post, joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. You're a big wing guy, aren't you?
I don't mind them. I don't mind them. You know, all those nights and bars when I was in college, I certainly devoured my share.
It's the stuff that comes with the wings that gets you.
Yeah. The 18 beers.
Yeah, well, we don't need to go there. Former baseball writer should never talk about drinking on the road. Generally leads down the wrong path. Troy, as a Broncos beat writer, I presume you expected or had wind of some changes. Is the scope of this change surprising to you?
Not the scope, but the swiftness of it, Jeff. I mean, 2 days ago, they're preparing to play the Colts, a game they're heavily favored. They should win, and they go to New England. There's no shame in losing at New England. Let's say they lose 31-21 at New England. Everyone probably comes back. There's probably not a lot of uncertainty regarding Peyton Manning's future at that point, unless he was injured in the game. And then they just, such a devastating loss, and they were, you know, just outwitted, outmatched, outmuscled. They lost in every way imaginable. And John Elway put this team together to win a Super Bowl. There's no other expectation. And he, you know, obviously he was upset. And the other thing that happened, Jeff, was it leaked out before the game from Fox Sports' Jay Glazer, who's a really good friend of Coach John Fox. You know, if the Broncos were to lose, John Fox would be available for other coaching jobs and interested. They weren't thinking about firing him, but when that report came out, coupled with what was an awful game, their worst of the season, everything kind of came together quickly that they both agreed, Fox and John Elway, that it was time for the Broncos to have a new coach.
What does this mean for Peyton? I mean, that would be the first question I would think everybody would have.
Yeah, I mean, and that's confusing. I know after the game Sunday, you know, Peyton Manning was noncommittal about returning, which was unusual because on December 24th, he said he was coming back if the Broncos wanted him. There was no question in his mind he wanted to come back. He has 2 years left on his contract. And then after the game, he was noncommittal. And I was told by people that know him way better than I do that he wanted to see what shook out with the coaching staff because he recognized the possibility of change. And Fox leaving, I don't know that that impacts him as much as, let's say, Adam Gase leaves as well to the 49ers and Jack Del Rio goes to the Raiders, even though he's on the defensive side. So at 39, coming off a poor second half and aging in dog years, would he want to start over with a new staff? That's a, you know, an interesting question at this point. Or the flip side of that is, are they going to go to Peyton and say, who would you like to have for the last 2 years of your career? And that's what we're not real clear of. But he met with John Elway yesterday, and they tabled the discussion and said, you know what, let's let a little more time pass. Emotions are raw, and we need to find a coach. So they got in the next probably week or so, we'll probably have a better feel for what Manning's thinking. But it could be 2 weeks because it's probably going to take a couple weeks for them to get a coach.
Well, I was going to say, now, Adam Gase, their offensive coordinator, I believe is interviewing in San Francisco or has interviewed in San Francisco. Would he be a candidate for this job? And might that be a sign, perhaps, that Peyton has had a role in the decision-making?
Well, it's interesting. He's a candidate, but he's not considered at all the front runner. And it just seems like in the building yesterday when we were there, which was very somber, you know, a punch in the gut day at Broncos headquarters, I get the sense they just think Adam's not ready yet, that he might need one. He's only been an offensive coordinator for 2 years, and he's a younger guy, and John Elway's thinking in terms of Super Bowl, and he led his two Super Bowls were under Mike Shanahan, and Shanahan's not a candidate, but they were under an experienced head coach who had done it a long time as an offensive coordinator. And I just don't know that Adam fits what Elway's looking for. Clearly, Manning and Gase get along famously, but it just seems like they're not leaning in that direction. That could change if a couple of the guys they want turn out to be not available, or, you know, let's say Dan Quinn in Seattle ends up somewhere else like the Jets, then all of a sudden they turn back to Adam. But right now, Jeff, he does not feel like the front runner.
Troy Rink covers the Denver Broncos for the Denver Post, and he joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Can you see Peyton playing elsewhere, or do you think it's more likely if he isn't back with the Broncos that he just shuts it down?
Yeah, that seems like the most likely scenario. I talked to a couple people who know him really well yesterday, and you know he's getting old, and getting old this year from the second half of the season on was hard on him. His body started to betray him. I mean, this idea he had a torn right quad. He strained his quad, and you know this, Jeff, from baseball. You know, once you strain a muscle, there's tearing. He was playing through an injury. The difference is the guys play through strained quads, but typically they're not 38, and that's the difference. Because Aaron Rodgers, if you watch him, he's much more limited than Peyton, but he's, what, 30, 31?
Right.
And so that's the difference. But I don't sense Peyton would try to force his exit to finish elsewhere. He hates change. He is the ultimate creature of habit I've ever covered.
What would the Broncos do? Yeah, I know it's hard to forecast trades or available quarterbacks, certainly. But if Peyton were to shut it down, what direction would the Broncos go?
Well, publicly and privately, they've expressed the utmost confidence in Brock Osweiler, you know, the big, tall, 6'7", 250-pounder they drafted out of Arizona State, who hasn't touched the field for 3 years with the Broncos. And he was – originally they drafted him because they weren't sure – if Peyton Manning would be healthy in 2012. So Osweiler would be it. But again, you raised the great question, is just if John Elway, as he said to us yesterday, and we'll talk to him again today, he's talking in terms of championships. I mean, there's not a long history of teams winning a championship with a quarterback who's never started a game in the NFL. So So would they have to go get another veteran? And at that point, would you just move on from Brock? I mean, if you don't feel comfortable giving him a chance, then what is he on the roster for? So they've got some interesting decisions. But it's hard for me to fathom how they could bill it as a Super Bowl or bust team and go with Osweiler at quarterback. I just think that's a lot to ask the kid who started roughly about 17 games since his junior year of high school. I mean, it's been a long time since he was in the mix and with the alarms blaring.
Troy, who other than John Elway will have a role in some of these important decisions? Is there someone he relies on, maybe somebody not directly affiliated with the team or somebody from his past that he uses to bounce ideas off of?
Well, that's a good question. He does trust Joe Ellis, who's the CEO. I mean, that's the other thing. This job isn't as desirable as it was a few years ago because the Broncos are now in trust. Pat Bowlen, that's a great Canadian, mm-hmm. suffering from Alzheimer's, and he's not doing well. The first game he attended all year was on Sunday, and he's not in great health. I mean, he's dealing with serious Alzheimer's. And so the team is in the family trust. Elway does trust Joe Ellis, the CEO. But John is kind of left to his own with football decisions. He does trust Tom Eckert, the guy they brought in to help with the salary cap stuff and managing that. And Matt Russell has been a confidant through the years. But I don't know if it'll go outside the organization as much. He's bounced ideas off of Mike Shanahan in the past. But Elway's really comfortable in his own skin in this role. And by firing Fox, Elway has put this back on himself. I mean, this is his move, his decision. And when you fire a guy who's won four consecutive division titles and winning an average of 12 games a year, that's on the GM. And he can't have a swing and miss in this because obviously they could have stayed the course under Fox and probably won 12 games next year.
Troy, it was good to talk to you as always, my friend. You be well.
All right, Jeff, take care, man.
Take care. That is Troy Rank. He covers the Denver Broncos for the Denver Post. Again, the Denver Broncos blowing out their coaching staff. And lots of turmoil right now in Denver. Suggestions, hints, indications that that Peyton Manning may not be back, may in fact retire, depending, one would assume, on who the new head coach and offensive coordinator are. For the Denver Broncos, or maybe Peyton's already made up his mind. That's it for the Blair Show today. Hockey Central at noon is next, followed, of course, as always, by Tim and Sid, and then Primetime Sports. Have a great day, everybody.